Today is Thursday. It's January 24th, 2019. It's 11:12 in the morning. Hi, this is Sean Williams. This is The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios of WGN Radio, downtown Chicago. You can hear me weekdays from 1 to 3 on WGN Radio.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of the Wind Trust Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, creator of the comic strip Prickly City, and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
I'm Eric Zorn, the end zone dancing columnist for the Chicago Tribune. I run three times a week.
He's feeling pretty good about a couple of things. I think I know what they are. And boy, are we going to argue about that. By the way, we want you to be part of the Mincing Rascals podcast. We will include today some of your voice messages to us. Voice message the Mincing Rascals, and we will include your questions, comments, and recommendations in the next pod. Guys, not because this is the most important thing, but because this Mincing Rascal can't resist the lowest hanging fruit. Let's eat from the State of the Union tree, shall we? January 3rd, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi invited the president to give a State of the Union address. January 16th, she suggested they find a different time. Since then, she said the president's not invited. And since then, the president, has responded to the January 3rd invitation saying he's planning on showing up. Visions of Navy SEALs, Harley-Davidson riders, and Colonel Sean Hannity storming the House door, Mrs. Pelosi on the other side pushing back, are now moot, as the president has just announced that he'll wait until after the government reopens to speak. Steve Bertrand, who wins this episode?
Pelosi won. She won much huger than I ever expected her to win.
You guys agree with him?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why I'm end zone dancing.
Yeah. Really? That's your end zone?
That's a badass. I love that.
I can't figure out why the president last night just completely succumbed.
Somebody sat around and said, let's play this out a little bit, Mr. President. Let's see. What's going to happen? You're going to get in your motorcade. You're going to drive over to the Capitol. You're going to storm the doors. Pelosi's going to turn off all the cameras, so whatever scene erupts inside is not going to be filmed. You're going to just, she may let you talk, but she'll turn off the camera so no one can see it.
I would have given a speech somewhere else. I would have given, gone.
That's what he thought he was going to do.
And he could have done it in the well of the Senate, for instance, because Republicans.
Or he could have gone to some big arena somewhere and done it, like a campaign rally.
Where he does really well.
Get people chanting.
Because yesterday when Pelosi disinvited him, John and I were on together, and I thought it was a bad move.
What's changed your mind?
That
he's capitulated.
That he caved, yeah.
This is the first time I can remember that he just backed down. He didn't get anything for it. He just backed down. He realized that he had gone too far.
And today you've got the speaker thanking the president for doing what he's doing. It's not the way I thought it would play out at all.
Even Donald Trump can read a poll. And he is being eaten alive by the shutdown. When you sit there in the Oval Office with the Speaker and the Minority Leader and you say, okay, I'll own a shutdown. I'll own it.
Celebrity voice impersonated, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that Patty Vasquez?
This is what happens. And so, when something bad happens and people are starting to realize that this is a bad, stupid thing, they pin it to him. And his approval rating is 35%. I mean, it's below 35% by any poll, including Fox News.
I think she looked petty yesterday in saying, we're not going to vote to let you come in. So he might have given a speech somewhere saying, the speaker did this, let me tell you the State of the Union. I don't know.
I think even he recognizes that moment is historic. It's important. And the surrounding is what matters. You're talking to a joint session of Congress.
Is it important, Scott?
I'm with you. By the way, last week you said something that I have never agreed with you more on, is let's get rid of the oral part of the State of the Union. It's stupid. It's juvenile. It's a waste of time. It used to be high statesmanship. John brought up the point. If you watch them from the 60s, the 50s, they had some gravitas, and it was an important stately moment, and you didn't have these idiots standing up and sitting down every 5 seconds.
So, well, I like it because I think the government needs a little pageantry, and we don't have much. So, but when do you think it started to fall apart? I mean, I think to back when Obama criticized the Supreme Court ruling with the justices there and Alito shaking his head. Remember that? That was a moment.
Yeah, it was that way for Clinton too.
Yeah, it goes back to Clinton. Well, no, it goes back to Clinton when the standing up and sitting down became more pronounced.
Yeah, I mean, these things have lost a little bit of their dignity as we've become dug in with our partisanship. When you think about it, the idea was that because we didn't. Hey, is that Patty Vasquez?
Ladies and gentlemen,
it's
Patty
to rescue me from
by the way, Patty, I'm
formed.
Glad you're here because I have not opined on the opening topic yet, which is who wins, Pelosi or Trump, in this government shutdown slash State of the Union thing. And I completely disagree with everything we've heard so far. So keep going, Eric. You were making some sort of point.
I yield the balance of my time to Patty Vasquez.
Well, she's just unpacking herself.
So what do you
still.
Say, John Williams?
I think that Nancy Pelosi went low when they went low. I don't think she ticked up this week in her sort of pettiness with the president. I don't think anybody wins when you get in the mud with pigs, and that's what she did. Now the president capitulated, which to me means he's looked like the adult in the room. He said, okay, I won't force a ridiculous issue. Imagine Trump actually having the upper hand. He gets to look mature.
Had he said that originally, I think you're right. I think the fact that he was stamping his feet and having a little tantrum before he did this meant that he just looked like he lost. I think Nancy Pelosi handled it with some dignity. She just said, no, we're not doing this until the government opens up again, which makes some sense.
Oh, no, I get that. But if you ask, there's the conversation about how this played out. I said, who won this week or this latest episode? And I don't think
I agree with you, John, that she shot low. And she, you know, instead she of hit. Shooting high, she shot low. But turns out that's where the target was.
I know this will shock nobody. I disagree with both of you guys. I think that she shot high. I think this is, we can't have a State of the Union address when the government is partially shut down.
That makes sense. Just theoretically, the government state is shut down. We can't have a State of the Union address.
And he wasn't going to cancel it. In fact, he had a hissy fit, many of them before. And I also want to point out that when he did back down, it was 11 p.m. at night Twitter.
Scott, I thought you guys were going to say, Patty, it's your turn now, that nobody won. But who do you think won this week's episode?
Well, I was taking off my coat and stuff. But look, this is not normal. I'm sure that you've already said that. But this is a moment in history that's going to be very strange when people look back at this. You know, just like, there were moments in Congress when someone took out a hickory stick, and that would be Andrew Jackson, you know, beating somebody on the floor of the legislature. This is a very strange moment in history. And they did this publicly, and it was a hissy fit on both sides. But, you know, the whole they go low, we go lower thing, you know what? Maybe sometimes they go low, you go zero F's given. I don't know.
A lot of people I know, trust, and respect, including producer Matt Bubala. I call him producer Matt Bubala. He was my producer for years. He's a Saturday morning host for us here now. But Matt said, fight fire with fire. Win that battle.
Yeah.
Am I misrepresenting Matt's views?
He
felt very strongly about that.
You and I agreed that the Pelosi thing was a bad idea. It turns out, again, two weeks in a row, I was wrong.
I don't think you and I were wrong.
No, I don't want to see the State of the Union address. We're not unified.
Build the wall and crime will fall sounds like a children's nursery rhyme, but that's the president's new recurring rhyming tweet. As branding, I think it's pretty good. Build the wall and crime will fall. But if that means the White House won't budge on this symbolic measure and the House of Representatives won't either, then the workers are going to approach a third missed paycheck. More air traffic controllers will call in sick. More ATF workers will call in sick. Eric, what are your thoughts about the latest on the wall?
Well, there's a couple of things, I think, points that need to continue to be made. One is that the Republicans could have done this for 2 years and did not. Another one is this has been made by some people I've been reading online saying that clearly the wall isn't, the Republicans themselves don't see the wall as being worth all that much because they're not really willing to give up anything for it. And if we're not talking about a really serious negotiation, what Trump offered over the weekend.
700,000 immigrants would be granted
for
three-year hiatus.
Essentially what Trump did, though, with that was he had pulled stuff off the table and said, okay, now I'm going to put it back on the table. This is he's not giving anything new. He's giving back what was there before and he'd taken away. So it wasn't really much of an offer.
But you would negotiate it. You would offer the $5 billion to the president if you got enough. I tweeted to Dick Durbin last weekend and said, Senator, because he was tweeting about it himself, and I'd hoped that he'd read my tweet because he doesn't seem to want to come on our show lately. But I said, would you trade DACA for $5 billion for 200 miles of wall? I think that's a fair question. It's in play, right, Eric?
We asked Luis Gutierrez that a year ago when he was in the Congress, and he said no.
Mm-hmm.
But they have before. I mean, the thing is that this wall has become, it's just basically Trump's ego is what we're talking about. Because, you know, the idea of build the wall and crime will fall. You ask people who really know what's going on, and the drugs are not going through, they're not being carried over the border by mules. They're going through normal points of entry. This is, and most
heroin
people,
comes into this country most, through the southern border.
Yeah, but through, but not, th- but
in
not,
cars on the road.
In
yeah.
cars. They're not being carried in knapsacks or backpacks. And a lot of the people who are here illegally are here because they've overstayed their visas. And so on the idea that you know, build a wall and crime will fall, it's one of the least effective forms of crime control I could think of in terms of cost benefit.
Well, no, but the other thing you mentioned how much drugs come through the border. Do you know that there were 223 metric tons of cocaine that were seized by the Coast Guard, and with that they detained over 600 smugglers, and they were only able to catch one out of five of their targets.
Well, we should pay the Coast Guard.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But not only that,
ironic.
But that's the thing is they're
the dike.
This is the kind of money they're asking for. When we're talking about border security, they want technology, they want human resources. The Coast Guard is saying if we have more helicopters, if we have more, they want a cutter, they want faster equipment, they could do more to seize the illegal drugs the president says is coming into the country.
And I also want to jump on Eric a little bit, his comment about this is just Trump's ego. It's not just Trump's ego, it's also the Democrats' ego. Well, all of a sudden we're hung up on this wall idea and we're not going to move forward because of that one four-letter word. And I mean, so it's unfair, and I hate to say this, but it's unfair to say that this is only Trump's ego. It's also the ego of the other side. To me, is again counterintuitive. It's counterproductive.
But
I completely agree with you.
Trump has shut down the government. The Democrats have said, let's reopen the government, we'll negotiate on the wall. Trump has shut down the government. He's holding the government hostage.
But then
he's
loses his leverage.
800. So what? He's losing. You'd say that about any kidnapping situation. This is a form of political terrorism. I'm serious.
Yeah.
I'm serious. He has taken 800,000 workers hostage. That's what he's done. Because the Democrats have said, let's open up the thing. Let's go through the democratic process, going through the various houses of Congress. We'll negotiate on border security. The Democrats have offered money on border security. They offered $20 billion in border security. Was it last year or the year before? The Democrats are not opposed to border security. They just don't want to give Trump his wall. And they don't want to validate. This is the other thing. They don't want to validate this hostage taking, because if they give in to Trump now, this is going to be the pattern from now on. The debt ceiling is coming up in March. He'll hold out the debt ceiling for, I don't know what other priority, wants some tax cuts for the rich or something like that. You can't let him use this as a negotiating
strategy. Patty, you agree with that, right?
I would support.
I noticed by your hand gestures and general cheering over there that you
were
on board.
I don't know who was saying it on Twitter, but I like what someone said on Twitter, that they would support a 3-year temporary wall in exchange for a permanent DACA fix.
A temporary wall. Right. A three-year temporary wall on wheels.
They only want to temporarily fix the DACA problem. So.
Well, by the way, that's the other problem with building a wall, is it also needs to be maintained and it has to be manned. And that's, we talked to the sheriff down in Pima County, and he was saying that you also need to man these points of entry as well. And we also need to send down judges and lawyers in order to process a lot of these cases. The wall is not obviously a solution. It is just an applause line in a speech.
Yes.
The Trump's campaign advisors knew immigration should be an issue for him. They wanted to find a way for him to say it, to articulate it. And that's when they came up with the wall idea. The wall idea was, according to the reporting, never a genuine idea to help with border security. It was a mnemonic device. Is that the right word?
Yes.
To help him talk about it on the campaign trail.
What's a small word?
No, but in other words, it's funny because Kellyanne Conway got into a disagreement with reporters on the White House lawn this week.
The question was, is the wall worth the government shutdown?
And so why would that be the question?
No.
Why is that
I'm
a
wondering,
good question?
What is the president's,
now I'm asking you why you're still saying wall when the president has said, I'm asking why you in the polling questions respectfully are still saying wall when the president has said you can call it whatever you want. Call it steel slab barriers.
Well, Kellyanne.
I was in the Situation Room when he said to Leader Schumer, Minority Leader Schumer,
he said it
that
was a new
you
slogan
can,
when he called it a wall.
That's a great slogan. Build a wall and crime will fall. We know that's
so
true.
So why can't we call it a
again,
wall when he calls it a wall?
Right. He calls it wall, steel slat barrier.
Even as the president has tweeted out, build a wall and crime will fall. So they're managing the narrative even as the president is making it more complicated. But Steve, you're on board now, right? Wall doesn't mean wall. Is that what you're telling me? It doesn't mean concrete wall, right?
Well, I don't know what you mean. No, I think that's what he means.
I thought you just articulated the notion that
the president, when he started saying we're going to build a wall and Mexico's going to pay for it, back then there was it wasn't because there was this strong desire for a wall. It was a gimmick for him to talk about immigration.
And then it worked on the campaign trail.
Right. And so then all of a sudden it became, we have to do it. By the way, Kellyanne Conway on the driveway, are they painting the briefing room or what's going on?
I don't know why she was out there.
They're not doing briefings anymore.
She comes out, Sarah Jessica Parker too.
Sarah Sanders?
Right. They all now talk on the driveway because they don't want to go, because the president doesn't want them in the briefing room.
The lighting's
anymore.
Better. Natural light right. is well, much
well,
kinder.
Let's also remember that there are hundreds of miles of wall and fencing and security barriers on the border already. It's not like there's nothing there, like it's just a porous open place. I mean, this is the other thing they're talking about. We're talking about building new segments of walls, what Trump wants. So the idea that the Democrats don't want to fund the wall, don't want to pay for there is wall there. They're paying for it.
Before we go to the Covington Catholic story this week, or just unpack some of the developments in the Chicago mayor's race this week, let's just finish this with a conversation briefly about BuzzFeed. Eric, have we heard the last on BuzzFeed's reporting that the president told Michael Cohen to lie to Congress?
I don't think so. I think if I would put money on this story, I would say that we're going to find out that BuzzFeed report was substantially accurate.
Well, then why did Mueller say it's not accurate?
He was an interesting way that he phrased that, and it was had to do with like what
he said it was not accurate. What's cagey about just, that?
Well, he said there were inaccuracies. He didn't say that the entire thing was inaccurate. I know that there was follow-up
I'm just
on that.
Saying, I'm
he
just,
never says anything about anything. 2 years, Mueller has not commented on reporting in the press, and now he's busted this.
Or he wants Congress to slow their roll. He doesn't want them to start subpoenaing people when he's still doing his investigation. He doesn't want this to be something that they're constantly hammering away at him and saying, we want more information.
I think it applies that everything else that's been reported is right.
Let me go around the table. Do you think that this is going to be substantially vindicated? Maybe Mueller didn't know, maybe the Southern District of New York knew, but that ultimately we're going to find out that, yes, Trump did tell Cohen to lie. I think that my guess, just from the way BuzzFeed is standing staunchly by the story, is that ultimately we'll find out that was true.
I would not be shocked to find out that's true.
Steve Bertrand?
I put a lot of weight in Mueller's comments, I would...
Vasquez, go.
The Senate has subpoenaed Michael Cohen to testify. I'm not sure if you're aware.
The Senate has. I wonder, too, that's an interesting point you made, Patty. By the way, what is your response to Eric Zorn's question?
I think it's going to be a fuzzy, probably. Does that make sense?
I think it'll be accurate.
Because I don't think it's going to be... The president may or may not have said it. There's no corroborating evidence, but it seems clear that he did.
Woodward and
because
Bernstein.
That's his MO. That's what he's done with the other people who have testified.
Now he's threatening to break somebody's legs. He's threatening his Cohen's father-in-law.
Cohen needs to shut up.
Yes.
He's marginally believable anyway, even though he's a pivotal character. What the truth is relative to him is really important. And mm-hmm. every time he opens his mouth, he undermines his credibility.
Woodward and Bernstein had an article that came out that was inaccurate. And, you know, everyone pointed to that. Nixon was like, see, they don't even know what they're talking about.
Oh, really?
They've got all this wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they ended up being ultimately right about 99% of things. Yes.
And last word on BuzzFeed is they announced today that they're also cutting 15% of the staff.
Yeah, I was just saying, who's going to be left? You know?
Yeah. Right.
I was sorry to see that.
Me too.
I still think they should change their name. They've become a different creature than they were when they first started. If they want to be more serious, I know that I shouldn't get hung up on the names of things in a digital world because Yahoo got this all started and
Google,
that was a real thing. So can you take a BuzzFeed seriously?
You mean the quizzes about which Disney princess I am?
Exactly. I know.
We're asking people to take the Mincing Rascals seriously. Come on.
Hi, this is Roy. Can you guys help me sort out this mess with the Chicago mayoral race?
Reporting this week is that Chicago Alderman Danny Solis wore a wire and recorded several conversations with Alderman Ed Burke. Burke has been charged with extortion, and the Solis recordings reportedly go back 2 years. Would have been interesting to see the retiring Solis at yesterday's city council meeting, but he had to take his son on a college tour and was out of town. What's more remarkable, guys, that a sitting, unindicted, uncharged, powerful alderman wore a wire on the most powerful alderman of all, or that none of them have done more of this in the past.
I was just saying, or that the other 48 were aghast.
I know.
The reaction is hilarious.
Like, I'll never be able to talk to another alderman again.
I know, we're a family, but you can hear it like, we're a family. Family doesn't do this.
Right.
Well, is this Solis's way of having to cut a deal? What has he been up to?
I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know the answer to that question, but it's been reported today as we record this that he has not been charged. Is that your understanding also, Eric?
About Solis,
yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Who knows what that's about? I mean, I think it's very hard to overstate how big this story could be in the annals of Chicago sleazy political stories. I mean, this you've got Ed Burke being wiretapped for what was it? It was a couple of years, and Solis wearing a wire. And they were saying last night on Chicago Tonight that every 30 days you have to go back to the judge
and get that redone.
And get it redone. So you imagine every 30 days they're going back to the judge going, hey, judge, listen to this. Unbelievable. So they're getting some stuff
for 2 years. They had to renew that application.
And everybody on that council, everybody who's had anything to do with Solis and Burke, is going, oh my, what did I
what
say?
Did I say?
What, you know, in what unguarded moments? And you even have the possibility you'll get these conversations that are sort of tangential, like the Pritzker conversation with Blagojevich that get out there and ruin people's reputations. And the weird thing is, we're having this mayoral election in a little bit more than a month, so we're not going to hear any of these tapes. But, you know, down the line, Mayor Mendoza or Mayor Chico or Mayor Preckwinkle may really be hit by some terrible wiretap information.
Yeah, you know, these will get leaked. I mean, they seem to get leaked,
but probably not by the election.
No.
So, I mean, it's a very strange time to be having what could be just a huge scandal. I mean, maybe not. Maybe it'll all be nothing. It'll all just be like, as one Burger King.
Well, I don't think so, though.
No, I don't think so either. But
they don't do that for 2 years on a Burger King. You know, there's got to be more there.
In the Burke story, especially that the Tribune story is now about Burke's son being hired by Preckwinkle, I don't know anything about it. Well, she met with Burke before she hired the guy to a $100,000 a year job, and
just to be clear on that, Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle's administration hired Burke's son for a $100,000 a year position, and at the time he was hired, Burke Jr. was under investigation for making inappropriate sexual remarks to colleagues. He has a job now with the city's Homeland Security Department. He's making $100,000 a year. Alderman Burke previously raised $100,000 for Preckwinkle's campaign at an event at his home. So if you want to line him up, you can do this. It's possible. He said, listen, you help my kid out, I'll raise you some money. She did get her money. The kid got the job. The kid, he's an adult. Or maybe it's just a coincidence that everything lined up
way.
Yeah,
exactly. I don't know how people continue to do these kinds of things and go, no, this seems like a good idea. What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah, this is how things, and that's the knock against Tony Preckwinkle, who was leading the mayoral race, was that she...
She says she has no recollection of conversations with Burke, and she didn't know that Burke Jr. was being investigated for sexual harassment until she read about it in your paper.
But did she know he was Burke Jr.?
She knew he was Burke. But she said, okay, you want to get him a job? Fine. She hands the application to the Homeland Security Department, said, you guys do with this what you want. Well, if she
hands it to somebody, then that means do
I think
this.
That has import.
Yeah.
No, and to say I don't. It was so funny. We've been having this series of debates with the mayoral candidates, and every one of them who, like, you know, Mendoza was like, you know, had her wedding at his house. And you were sworn that she goes, house? What house? There was a house?
It was Ann Burke's house. Ann Burke's the,
right.
You know,
that's what she married.
Said. Ann Burke's house. Who is the wife of, stay with me, kids, Ann Burke.
Is Ann Burke's married? I didn't know
that's
that.
That's weird because Mendoza is a darling. Love the campaign commercials. You know, I vote based on the campaign commercials. And I'm shifting my allegiance from my love of Gary Chico's ads to the Mendoza commercials because she seems to have more money right now.
Pick a winner right now. Who's going to come in first? John Williams.
Not Preckwinkle. I'm going to say the winner, based on my gut today, Mendoza. Final answer.
Who's going to win or who do I want to win?
Who's going to come in first?
Mendoza.
Mendoza.
Mendoza. I say we're 4-for-4, Mendoza. Who do you want to win?
Have you seen the Jerry Joyce's numbers?
None.
Bertrand is being suspiciously quiet.
Jerry Joyce's numbers are like, in Crane's or something, it was huge numbers in the last polling.
Or polling.
Polling. Yeah.
I've been getting a lot of calls at my house saying, we're just doing a 5-question survey. Will you answer it? And I always do. I always do. And I always answer honestly.
Bertrand had to step out, so I'll take his vote and I'll say Mendoza.
By the way, when I get some of those calls about polling, I get so many calls on my cell phone now. As soon as I answer, I go, this call is being recorded for quality purposes. And they hang up.
You say that to them?
So that as soon as I answer the phone.
Let me hear your, do that. Give me your.
This call is being recorded for quality purposes.
Oh, that's nice. Great. That's nice.
I couldn't put it off.
Wow.
Hey, rascals, this is Carol. What do you guys think about the Covington Catholic thing this week?
Here we go. Teens from Covington Catholic High School in Cincinnati went to a pro-life rally in Washington, D.C. last weekend. They were videotaped chanting and cheering around a small group of Native Americans.
They come again.
Notably, a high school junior stared smugly into the face of a Native American named Nathan Phillips. Patty, how have your views on this episode this week changed?
I watched the entire hour and 46 minutes of the black Hebrew Israelites yelling at people, including a priest who was standing by himself for a while, and the names that including a rapist, pedophile, and a name before that that was ugly. They were engaging in a lot of arguments with people, and at one point one of the guys was saying, "If that guy gets any closer to me, I'm going to tear him up." Right, so they were very caustic and even sounded a little bit violent.
Look at all these dusty ass crackers with that racist garbage on. Can't stand in the damn sun for 5 minutes.
The kids, when they started filling in the stairs, I kept thinking, because I was just there last year, why are the chaperones keeping them there? Because that's a big, huge, wide open space. There are plenty of other areas to wait for
buses.
They're
waiting for a bus, but they could have waited in a lot of areas. They could have gotten away from these guys.
Well, the turnaround there for the bus is farther away. There's a whole park in that area. So, I mean, and then to say that the kids went, oh, can we, you know, chant back to defuse this. They were escalating this, and they were starting to get closer. That was that part where that kid takes off his shirt and does his little stomping thing. It was bizarre. It was surreal. You know, the when Nathan Phillips comes in and walks right up to them, it was a strange moment. I don't know if he really wanted to defuse it. You could see them in the background of the video. But like I said, I watched the entire thing. There was no reason for these kids to engage. There was no reason for the chaperones to allow this to continue.
Do you think that the media misrepresented, or we all got a false impression of what the high school kids were doing to the Native Americans when we first consumed this? Did we get a false impression of what was happening?
They were emboldened by their numbers. And when the Native Americans came in and they started doing the tomahawk chop and mocking them, I mean, like, is that ugly? It's ugly. Did we blow it out of proportion? Sure. Did we jump on something because of the MAGA hats? Yes. But, you know, it also shined a light on a really privileged school that, you know, was standing to instigate something,
The crap that kid and that school are getting now, they've got it coming.
To that point where there are death threats. And
I don't mean that, but I mean, we don't know many Catholic high schools outside of the Chicago area. We all know one, and we think that's a crappy place with a bunch of crappy, smug kids. That's on them today.
When you have two kids on television on Fox saying, yeah, blackface is school spirit, what?
I think that was misrepresented. I mean, but I'll shut up. Scotty, where are you on all of this?
On this kind of thing, I always wait a few days. I know my natural conservatism.
Why are you here?
I do. I take on stuff like this. I always wait a couple of days because I want to see how it shakes.
Cold takes from Scott Stennis.
Yeah, cold takes. That's right.
I take a deep breath and then I just let it flow over me. Like it's a Zen exercise. What it comes down to is where Eric and I would agree with, and I think we all can, is that you wear a MAGA cap. You don't wear it because you wear it as it's a trigger. You wear it as a FU to people around you.
If you don't know that, guess what it is? You might as well figure it out now. The kid bought the hat that day. I don't know if he's a president supporter or if he was using it at an FU, but people receive it that way. You're stupid if you think your presidential hat is neutral. It's not. It's not.
And so I can see where, you see this privileged kid with this smug smirk on his face with his MAGA hat. Yeah, that's going to trigger people. And I think, but I also wanted to wait and see what the rest of the story was.
Has your view changed?
Not appreciably. I think it was a bunch of jerks. I think
Black Hebrew Israelites?
Yeah, whatever the hell that is. and was clearly instigating people and trying to.
This is what this is about. This is really, you watch the video I did too, Patty. It's about those black guys.
Did you see the part where toward the end, so after Nathan leaves, and so this went on even after the Native Americans crossed through. Did you hear that part where one of the guys goes, because they were getting much closer, the kids were getting closer, and he goes, and this is after swearing and calling them all kinds of names, including incest babies and future school shooters,
yeah.
He goes, one of the guys, the guy videotaping said, hey man, I appreciate the dialogue, but can you back up a little bit?
Was that one of the black guys that said that? I heard the adult voice.
I appreciate the dialogue?
I know. That's exactly.
Please.
Exactly.
But where are you on this, Mr. Z?
I guess I'm basically where Scott is. I mean, the kids were acting like jerks. The chaperone should have held them in. The main instigators were clearly the black Hebrew Israelites. And I think that Nathan Phillips probably should have taken his peace song and his drum to them and not to the boys.
Yes.
But that's a small, I mean, I think it was an error in judgment. I don't think that helped. I think him going up to those boys didn't really help defuse the situation. I don't think the boys were trying to defuse the situation. No one was trying to defuse the situation, which is why my column on this focused on the chaperones. I mean, I said, like, look, this is, you move them away, you tell the kids, look, you want to, you know, yelling school chants, maybe since you're a Catholic school, maybe prayer, maybe you think about turning the other cheek, and you just get them away from there, because when you go to Washington, D.C., you're going to run into, like, nutty, crazy, vile protesters. It's like, that's where they go. That's where the Westboro Baptist Church people go. That's where these people go. And you just got to have to learn to deal with that, especially when you're in this environment where it's kind of fraught. You got the Women's March the next day. You've got the Right to Life March?
That's what they
March
were there for.
Life.
Yeah.
You've got that on the day that they were there. I mean, you've got, you know, conflicting things going on. You need adults to keep everybody calm there. And nobody really was acting like the adult to keep
those
people
kids
calm.
Were there for an
nobody
hour.
Knew how to diffuse that situation.
And it made everyone dig in. I mean, it became a national story that made everyone, where you already stood before.
And it's so funny because this is like, I said this morning to, I think it was Scott, we were talking about the net that I can't remember our country making so much out of so little as we have in this particular story. Nobody was hurt. Nobody got any punches thrown. Nobody
right.
was like, no.
This whole thing comes and goes without any consequence to anybody, but that the video exists and now we all get to digest it. And so now we're making more out of it than it was. Literally, we are doing that. But the takeaway was that you've got the emblem. People said this will be the face. This was the Saturday tweets and Sunday tweets. This will be the face of this administration. That smug, entitled look on that kid's face with the hat. That's why this mattered, because at least it represented that.
Yeah.
I think it's a misrepresentation.
Think if he had just backed, all he had to do was back away. He decided he was going to stand his ground.
30 feet would have cured all of this.
Yes.
Or 5 feet. He stands there. You know, I mean, I think it's pretty clearly a smirk. I think there's a lot of gaslighting going on. Like, no, he was nervous. That's what. No, he was standing. He wasn't moving. He was like, he was smirking at the guy.
Well, he said on the Today Show interview that I had to stand my ground.
You don't have to stand your ground. You just back away.
Yeah, that's right. Actually not the Catholic or Christian view.
He was really managed on that Today Show interview. You could just see him almost remembering what he was told to say.
I was saying a silent prayer. No, he wasn't.
He said it is my position.
My position is that I was not disrespectful to Mr. Phillips. I respect him. I'd like to talk to him.
Right. I know 17-year-olds.
They say that all the time.
He's
dad, my position.
He's a high school junior, and a lot of, the people who wrote to me who were rational about this, calm and not just
how many
swearing,
did you get of those?
No, not as many as you'd hope. We're pointing out that these are kids, and that is true. They are kids, and high school boys in a group like that, they're going to be like, you know, and who has not, I mean, not done something like this, but you know, high school boys are like kind of out of control a lot. So it's like, this is not like the biggest thing in the world. High school boys act like jerks.
My salve to all of this is that it's not as bad as it felt Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah. That when you watch the video Patty looked at and just take a breath, you go, okay, this is one punk kid sneering at a guy, and that's all. Those kids didn't come gunning for the Native Americans. It wasn't this ideological or racial clash, not with the Native Americans and the kids. It was just some kids acting screwy, and the video made it look a lot more pernicious than it really was.
I'm bothered by how much money they must have spent to go to this Right for Life. I mean, you know how expensive it is to fly all those kids there?
Put them on a bus from Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So maybe it was a day trip down and back, and I don't know the purpose. Well, I know the purpose of it. They said, we're a Catholic school. This is our continuing fight and education for the kids on the value of lives born and unborn. Here come our recommendations. Steve Bertrand just came back into the studio. Did you have to go do some breaking news, Steve, or did you just get bored with what we were doing here?
He was.
Not the Covington thing again.
Yes, to both can be an answer.
I had a guest that just canceled from a show that's coming up in 5 minutes. So
I know, we got to get out of your studio.
I had to go record an interview at the last minute.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Talk about multitasking. How was the interview?
Yeah, it was all about the World Squash Championships.
Oh, man.
I'm not kidding you. The Egyptians dominate World Squash. Did you know that?
I was thinking of the vegetable. You mean the sporting event. Okay.
Yeah. The right, championship tonight in Grand Central Terminal.
So that's
got to
be your recommendation.
I'm recommending that, and I'm betting.
Who's carrying it?
They play in this glass cube, you know. And
I know.
We don't
squash
really
is,
care.
No,
Steve.
But I'm just wondering, who is it on ESPN2 or
I don't know.
ESPN Squash?
12,
or
yeah.
So that's
it's
my recommendation. I recommend squash.
Okay, recommendations. Scotty, you got anything for us?
I have two. I want to make a comment. I have to correct last week's podcast. I was listening to it with my wife, who was furious at me because we do not buy our razor blades at the dollar store. We get them from Amazon.
Okay.
So, Janine, I've set the record straight. I just want to be, because I got into a lot of trouble for that.
My wife shakes her head at things I say every day. She goes, no, we didn't. No, you didn't. Or you got that wrong.
I know. Well,
I want her to be on this panel.
My recommendation is Happy Days Are Here Again. It's the story of the 1932 Democratic Convention. If you're a political wonk, what's fascinating about this story is that FDR came in with a majority of the delegates, but not enough to get the 2/3 that he needed, or the 3/4, or whatever the percentage was. And so he almost lost the nomination. This went to 4 to 6 ballots. And it's wonderful. It's a short read, but it's fascinating. It has all these great characters, like Huey Long is involved in this, Al Smith, all the old, you know, the early 20th century great Democrats are there.
Was it in Chicago?
Yes.
And was it
the Republican and the Democratic conventions.
Who was the congressman? Bill Dawson? Was there an African-American congressman who was in part of that? No,
that wasn't mentioned.
I'm missing my stories. Okay.
But there was a favorite song. Cermak is in there.
Oh, wow.
And I did not know that he did not like FDR. Happy Days Are Here Again, like the campaign song, and it's by Steve Neal. And it's available. I sent the link to
late great Steve Neal from the Sun-Times? Or is this a new book?
Stop the tangents. Bertrand, go.
So Cermak didn't like FDR.
Yeah.
But wasn't Cermak killed in an assassination attempt?
Standing next to him. Maybe
FDR.
That's maybe,
we're
maybe,
still
maybe,
on a
it
tangent.
It was a pre-dislike.
Yes.
So today is Robert Burns, the Scottish bard's birthday. So I am reading some poetry by Robert Burns.
Oh, very acquaintance
nice.
Be forgot.
Yes,
very nice. You know, the book
A Man's a Man of That.
My wife got me for Christmas that was stolen off our front step, and then eventually she reordered, and it just recently arrived. And that was the complete unabridged works of the poet Carl Sandburg. So I have I have a book this thick of Carl Sandburg
so
poetry.
Good.
And there's hundreds of poems about Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's not any great revelation, but when did you last sit down and read them? It's very fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to read them out loud. Share them with your kids.
The Ryan Sandburg collection. Much shorter. Much
Zorn, go.
I'm going to partially rescind my last week's recommendation of the Nest thermostat, because I discovered that it doesn't have a hold feature.
Now, what does that
like
mean? You
basic.
Said that to me. I don't understand.
You can't just hold temperature and to keep it at a steady temperature. We discovered this really on Martin Luther King Day. We were home and realized we couldn't keep the temperature up. It kept wanting to go back to this previous schedule. It kept trying to override us. So I wrote to Nest. They didn't write back. And I went online and realized that a lot of people consider Nest to be an arrogant company.
So I usually miss it. I usually miss the recommendations. Is this what I'm missing?
You're rescinding.
Well, but I'm rescinding, but I'm
we're
also,
not doing
wanna,
the recommendations. We're doing something else.
I want to quickly recommend both Fire Festival documentaries. Hulu has one. Netflix has one. Watched them both last week.
Yeah.
I believe the Netflix one is slightly better, but that they work together very well.
Producer Griff was telling me about that and said they're just really fun. And it's so inconsequential, right? Some rich kids didn't get their money's worth. But
yeah.
So, you know, you can really hate anybody you want in this with impunity. I hear they're both terrific.
It's terrific, yeah. Somebody said on Twitter, is like, when a rich white kid gets scammed, an angel gets his wings.
Do you have a recommendation for us, Mr. Bertrand, or you're not?
I really don't.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm glad you came back for this segment.
Squash.
Okay, fine. We'll watch the squash championship. Well, that wraps...
I don't know the channel.
That wraps... I don't think anybody's going to ask. That wraps up this week's edition of The Mincing Rascals. Patty, thanks for making it in.
I'm sorry I was
this
late.
Last part notwithstanding. Steve Bertrand, Eric Zorn, Scott Stantis.
Thank you.
I saw Bob Ferguson over there a minute ago. We're produced by L.F. Garris. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.